Welcome. Thank you guys for all coming out today to this wonderful event here in Exeter, the birthplace of the Republican Party. This is something that, you know, we have a bit of competition with some folks in Wisconsin, I believe it is, that think that they're actually the birthplace of the Republican Party, but really happened right here. A famous cut in 1853, right across the street. And so what I'd like to do today is introduce you, and I have the great privilege and honor of introducing the Patriot pastor, Garrett Lear. He is a phenomenal individual who spent much time at our state house advocating for homeschooling and Christian schooling throughout the state, as well as he's prayed and prayed for every state capital in the United States. So he's very well-traveled, very well-known, and he's also a member of the Sons of the American Revolution as well. So I don't want to take up a whole lot of your time. You're not here to listen to me. You're here to listen to this fine gentleman, my rights, message on Amos Tuck and the founding of the Republican Party. So without further ado from myself, please join me in welcoming Garrett.
Say that it is an honor and a privilege to be able to be here with you today would be an understatement, particularly because I'm always looking to encourage young people. I was once a young person myself and actually fished in the river over here and caught a hornpout. And we're going to have a quiz afterwards and have to ask how many people here know what a hornpout is. If you're an Exeter resident or somebody who's been around, you should know that. I also want to mention to you that this handsome fellow, whose picture is right here, Amos Tuck, is buried not far from here. And if you get a chance, you can go to the cemetery on Linden Street. And there's a monument there that you would see of Amos Tuck. And of course, I would like to do an overview, starting with an overview of his life, and then I'm actually going to read to you documents from his statements in Congress and other such places. Amos Tuck was born August 2nd, 1810. He died on December 11th, 1879. To say he was a political figure in New Hampshire and the founder of the Republican Party is really an understatement. His early life and education, he was born in Parsonfield, Maine, which, if you know where that is right across the border from Effingham, New Hampshire. On August 2nd, 1810, the son of John Tuck, a sixth-generation descendant of Robert Tuck, a founder of Hampton, or Winnicott, New Hampshire, in 1638. And if you go to Hampton, you will see Tuck Field there. Amos Tuck attended Effingham Academy and Hampton Academy and graduated from Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire in 1835. He studied law and passed the bar. Tuck married Davida Nudd and had a son, Edward Tuck, on August 2, 1842, and a daughter, Ellen Tuck French, who married Francis Orman French, president of the Manhattan Trust Company. Tuck was an early supporter and donor to the Free Will Baptist Parsonsfield Seminary. He is a namesake of the Tuck School of Business of Dartmouth. He was a leading citizen of Exeter, New Hampshire, for 40 years and played an important part in Exeter's history between 1838 and 1879. Now, that's just some background. Now, his professional life. In his youth, Amos Tuck came to Hampton and from 1836 to 1838 was headmaster of the Hampton Academy, founded by his ancestors. He was admitted to the bar in 1838 and commenced practice in Exeter. He later became a trustee of Dartmouth College, and after leaving politics, Tuck was commissioned as a naval officer of the Port of Boston, 1861 to 1865. Following the American Civil War, he resumed the practice of law and also engaged in railroad building, at which he gained significant success and wealth. Tuck was elected to the New Hampshire House of Representatives in 1842 as a member of the Democratic Party but broke with pro-slavery Democratic leaders in 1844 and was formally cast out of the party. He ran for Congress anyway and was elected as an independent to the 30th Congress. In 1845, he called a convention to form an independent movement in favor of anti-slavery congressional candidate John P. Hale. This convention would later be identified as the nucleus of the Republican Party. During the months following the convention, which was described by Tuck as respectable in numbers and unparalleled in spirit, Tuck worked tenaciously to grow his young party. His hard work and enthusiasm resulted in successful election of Hale in 1846. Tuck himself ran as a pre-soil candidate to the 31st Congress and as a Whig to the 32nd Congress of March 4, 1847 to March 3, 1853. After three consecutive terms, he returned to Exeter in 1853 and began a movement to unite the many minor political factions that existed in the state of New Hampshire. As the founder of the Republican Party, Tuck organized a secret meeting on October 12, 1853 at Major Blake's Hotel in Exeter. And that building still stands, by the way. Of a group of anti-slavery men, Tuck suggested they form a party to be called Republicans. The term Republican Party had been widely used in New Hampshire politics in the 1830s. The dinner is commemorated by the tablet now affixed to the Squamscott House in Exeter. The participants campaigned for several parties in 1854 state elections, but the Republican Party did not run a ticket that year in the state. He helped form the state Republican Party in 1856 and was a delegate to the Republican National Conventions in 1856 and 1860. Tuck was appointed a delegate to the Peace Convention held in Washington, D.C. in 1861 in an effort to devise means to prevent the impending war. He was a personal friend of Abraham Lincoln, John Greenleaf Whittier, and many other men prominent in his time, and is said to be responsible for putting Lincoln in office. Lincoln would have never realized his goals, according to Dartmouth historian Professor Frank Smallwood, if his old friend Amos Tuck of Exeter, New Hampshire, had not played such an influential role in helping him to secure the Republican Party's presidential nomination in 1860. Tuck died in Exeter, New Hampshire, on December 11, 1879. He was interred in Exeter Cemetery, as I said, just off the road. You'll see a big granite monument with an urn on top. It's of Amos Tuck, and many of his family is buried in that very same area. His son, Edward Tuck, financed and founded at Dartmouth College the Amos Tuck School of Business Administration and funded the New Hampshire Historical Society building, a beautiful granite structure in Concord, New Hampshire. Family and political descendants founded the Amos Tuck Society to promote and spread the history of Tuck's contributions and founding of the Republican Party. Edward Tuck would also graduate from and become a major donor to Dartmouth College. He made his fortune in banking, railroads, and international trade, becoming vice consul to France. Now, as far as bibliography, if you would be interested in reading more about him, one of the most comprehensive of the books about him was written by Charles Robert Corning, Amos Tuck, Exeter, New Hampshire, The Newsletter Press, 1902. Also, Jeremiah Wadley Dearborn, Sketch of the Life and Character of Honorable Amos Tuck, read before the Maine Historical Society, December 1888, Portland, Maine, printed by B. Thurston and Company, 1888. And Hugh Gregg, Birth of the Republican Party, A Summary of Historical Research on Amos Tuck and the Birthplace of the Republican Party at Exeter, compiled by Hugh Gregg and Georgie Hiphoff, Nashua, New Hampshire, Report Resources of New Hampshire, 1995. Amos Tuck, autobiographical memoir of Amos Tuck. And the remarks of Mr. Tuck of New Hampshire on the New Hampshire contested election in Washington, MP, 1851. Also, Michael Burlingham wrote Abraham Lincoln, A Life, Volume 1, Chapter 8, pages 774 and other pages you will find written there about Amos Tuck. Now, many people are probably saying, how come I never heard of this guy? Well, there are a lot of people in history that have been so influential that have been purposely not recorded or purposely not exposed because of what they believed, and he is certainly one. Now, I'm not going to read the entire letter here, but it's 8 of 8. This is the 8th. Legislature and the people of the state who are apt to keep their eyes open choose to make it. Now, this is what he himself said. I will also, in the way of apology for my Democratic friends, say that I am informed on such authority as satisfies me, although I do not vouch for its correctness, that several plans were proposed in caucus for paving the way for aspirants to a seat in Congress. One was to annex the town of Pittsfield to number one, which town, through their representative, revolted at the purpose to which the town was to be subjected, and met the proposition with the assurance that if the thing were done, every vote in two should be given to the Whig candidate. So also of the town of Barnstead, whose representative also rejected the proposition with that sort of scorn which honest men would be likely to feel, and broke the coils that were about enfolding him. To consign the honest democracy of these old towns to the ungenerous office of disenfranchising their fellow citizens was an undertaking of difficult accomplishment. Such a medicine for disabled democracy was rather difficult to force down the throats of a spirited people, although it was recommended by ever so skillful a doctor. I do not think that anything short of chloroform would make a patient passive under such an operation. But the democracy of Plainfield and Barnstead were abandoned, and the search was made in the hill country for others who might have to come 30 miles further to do the dishonest service, who were thought to be more willing to answer the humiliating object in view. It remains to be seen whether the yeomanry of Wakefield, Brookfield, and Tuftonborough will bow submissively to that which their neighbors in Barnstead and Pittsfield revolted at. Have they no indignation for the purchased villains who could be brought up in Philadelphia to be transported to New York to vote and carry an election there? And will they lend themselves to the office of disenfranchising to carry an election there? Let them answer this question at the ballot box, if it must needs be, that we are to be disenfranchised. We would prefer that it should be done by the more convenient and less humbling process of importation rather than to be done by our own people. Now, sir, I am nearly done. I wish only to invoke this House to rise above the technical difficulties that have been raised, and which alone can prevent a just determination of the case, and to give such a judgment as will satisfy good men of all parties. I can assure, gentlemen, that the people of New Hampshire are an honest people, and that a refusal by this House to spread over the districting law of 1850 the shield of their protection will meet with a hearty approval among the masses of all parties. This House is by the Constitution may judge of the election of its own members. This duty is secured to us with the design of guarding the elected franchise and producing the rights of the people. The fundamental principles of republicanism are always to be regarded and never permitted in one single instance to be trodden down. If we be regarded and never permitted in one single instance to be trodden down, if we permit artifice and dishonesty to triumph over the honest demands of the people for a just and equal representation, we shake the confidence of the people, sap the foundations of the government, and fail of performing the duty which the Constitution has imposed upon us. If we sanction an erroneous principle, although it may be appropriately trifling, as in this instance, merely affecting representation for 2 months, yet the bad example will recoil upon us hereafter and produce mischief in the country. I conclude by moving to amend the resolution offered by the chairman of the committee so that it will read, resolve that Jared Perkins is entitled to a seat in this House as a member from the 3rd District in the state of New Hampshire to fill the vacancy occasioned by the resignation of the Honorable James Wilson. I suppose I should stop there just for a moment to say, can you see how much things are happening today that are very similar to what happened then with him and what he was saying? And as I say, many of the founding fathers throughout our country, they spoke prophetically. They were prophesying things that were going to happen. Now, another document. I know what denunciations are hurled against those who express the sentiments I have avowed, but I cannot regard them. My convictions are deep, and my course is plain. I trust I shall never betray myself or my country by giving aid and comfort to a war which I believe is wrong, dishonorable, and dangerous. Both Barry and Chatham stood by their country in the time of our revolution and gave advice, remonstrance, and solemn warning, which if followed would have saved to England her colonies. In the belief that even the humblest member of this House has the opportunity to imitate their glorious example, I shall denounce the Mexican War, expose the reckless ambition of its authors, and to extend to my ability to warn the people against its consequences. If this be treason, my rebels may make the most of it. A speech of that nature coming from one who but a few months before had been one of the younger leaders of the Granite State Democracy was full of significance. From that hour, Amos Tuck stood forth an unyielding representative of the rising conscience of the North. From him, no concession would be having anything to do with it. We can neither touch nor handle, cherish nor protect it. We leave it where our fathers left it, and though we regard it as the sum of all the evils, we shall overstep no law in our desire to see it exterminated. And this poem that he wrote, we ask not that you shall snap the links that bind you to your dreadful slaves. Hug, if you will, a corpse that stinks and bear it with you to your graves. But that you may go, coupled thus, you never shall make slaves of us. Are gentlemen surprised at the anti-slavery excitement in this country? If there were no excitement, it would be true that the spirit of liberty is dead. There not only is excitement, but that excitement will continue and increase till the free states, under the guarantees of the Constitution, can enjoy exemption from slavery. I cannot promise quiet to the slave states even then. Never will till they get rid of their particular institution, which is derogatory to man and in violation of the laws of God. The compensation of providence are inevitable, and the South cannot escape reaping the fruits of their institutions. Now, those documents are pretty hard to read from the many places that I read them. But I believe that it shows what an important person, and of course we also have meetings here in a building still standing, the First Congregational Church right here in Exeter, and gathered some people, and I could give you a longer list of all the influential people that Amos Tuck was friends with. Of course, he was in law practice with a man named Bell, who was only just about 6 years older than he, but Mr. Bell opened a lot of doors for Amos Tuck in terms of his law practice, that in those days, being a member of the bar meant you could not, he was a member of the Rockingham County Bar, didn't cover the whole state necessarily, so some things have changed, but his convictions are very strong. I turn this back over to the next speaker. Thank you.